We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Folks, by now you know the deal. We check in with our man Phil Steele once a week during the college football season. We talk games, we talk point spreads, the betting angle of college football, which, let's be honest, why else are you watching Louisiana and Houston in something called the Radiance Technologies Independence Bowl, unless you got a little action on the Raging Cajuns or the Cougs? So, as part of being a lifelong, or I guess a season-long subscriber, listener here to College Sports Now, we figured what's better than before we get to Christmas, we bring in our man Phil one more time to put a couple of little Christmas gifts underneath the tree, or if you're like me, a couple of gifts underneath the old Hanukkah menorah. So, without further ado, our man, Phil Steele, checking in with part two of some bowl plays as we get ready for the buildup to the New Year's Six and, of course, the college football playoff. Phil, I've been keeping track of your plays since the last time we spoke, and I got to be honest, man. I mean, informal, I had you at like 7-3, 8-3, something like that with these early bowl picks that you gave out on the show last week. So pretty solid start to bowl season. How do you feel about how the first week or two has gone for you?
You know, I feel real good about it. And, you know, coming into it, I had a lot of reservations about the bowls with all the opt-outs and things like that. But so far, so good. We'll see how this next week goes.
I got to be honest, the only real surprise for me, and there were so many variables, like you mentioned, with the transfer portal and opt-outs, Western Kentucky and South Alabama kind of threw me for a loop. I didn't think that Western Kentucky was going to come out and just sling it all over what was a pretty good South Alabama defense all year, but they did. And it was just too much for South Alabama. Other than that, I feel like it's been a pretty solid start to the bowl season. Any surprises based on what you've seen through the first couple of these games before we look ahead to the upcoming slate?
Probably the no-show of Florida. I didn't know they'd be that much of a no-show for the game, but they were. And I guess you could have anticipated that possibly. And then maybe the backdoor cover there by Liberty.
Yes. Yes, good times in the Boca Raton Bowl for those of you diehards out there that were staying up late with the Rockets and the Flames. That was a bizarre game. All right, so looking ahead to this weekend, Phil, we got a couple of games on Friday, including one in the afternoon that I want to start with. The Radiance Technologies Independence Bowl, Louisiana and Houston. Talk to me about these teams. Houston's been a massive disappointment this year, Phil. Preseason top 25 team. They crashed out of the rankings. They have struggled this year. What do you expect between the Cougs and the Cajuns?
Yeah, you know, watching the two teams this year, I definitely think Houston is the more talented team. Definitely on offense. I do give ULL a slight edge on defense, but a large edge on offense to Houston. I like the way Clayton Tune's throwing the football around the yard, a 35-9 ratio, hitting 69%. And Louisiana has been sort of all year. And Ben Woolridge seemed to give their offense some life, but now he's out for the year and they're back to Chandler Fields at QB, and I think that might hurt their offense a little bit. However, Dana Holgorsen struggles in bowl games. Dana Holgorsen struggles as a favorite. And as you've mentioned, Houston has been a disappointment most of the year. In fact, their defense over the last four games given up 480 yards per game, allowing opponents 60 yards above their season average. So I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. But I like I only have Houston by about four in that game. Call it something like 31-27.
Interesting. By the way, weather might be wreaking havoc on this game and a couple of others that we may talk about, because the temperature in Louisiana on Friday with that Arctic chill coming in is supposed to be under 20 degrees at kickoff. So something to keep an eye on between Louisiana and Houston. Weather will not be a factor in Tampa for Wake Forest and Missouri. It'll be a little chillier than usual. It'll be in like the 50s. But talk to me about the Deacs and the Tigers. Little ACC-SEC matchup hooking up in the Gasparilla Bowl, Phil.
Yeah, and it's offense versus defense in this one, Stephen. When you look at Wake Forest, they've been a pure offensive team all year. You got to love the fact that Sam Hartman's actually playing in this game. Now, he may go ahead and hit the portal after the game. He may go NFL, but he stuck it out. He's going to play with his teammates. And I love Wake's offense all year. I mean, they could run the football with Ellison and Turner, I should say. And then Hartman, of course, having a great year, 35 touchdown passes this season. Now, defensively, Missouri rates a large edge. They did give up 724 yards to Tennessee. Other than that, they've been playing really good. However, for this game, Missouri's going to be without three key defensive players, a defensive end, a linebacker, and another defensive tackle, plus their top wide receiver is going to be out for the game. Missouri has actually not been above 500 since 2018. And I think when you look at Wake Forest this year, they've actually led every single game they've played. So I think Wake Forest is a better team. If Missouri's defense was 100%, not missing the three players, I might give them a more of a chance. But I like Wake, and the spread's only a point in this one, a point or two. So I definitely like Wake to win the game.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, let's go to Saturday. This is a real degenerate, diehard, sickos game, however you want to spin this, because it's Christmas Eve. It's the Hawaii Bowl. It's the only game in town. I mean, there's not a lot of sports happening the night before Christmas. But Middle Tennessee, San Diego State, hooking up in Honolulu. Aztecs about a 7-point favorite, Phil. Do you have a read on either one of these teams?
Yeah, usually, Stephen, in the bowls prior to the big games, I like to go underdogs generally, especially when they're a touchdown-plus dog. However, in this one, I actually lean with San Diego State. You look at the last two bowl games that Brady Hoke's been in. Last year, they took on the CUSA champion, a very good UTSA team, and beat them by 14 points. And we know what happened with San Diego State. They were 2-3 to open the season. They fired their offensive coordinator. They brought in Jalen Madden at QB, and they went 5-2 down the stretch. Only losses to Fresno on the road by 4, which is a good loss, and then to Air Force at home. So I like the way they're playing. Defensively, they're allowing just 261 yards per game over the last 4 weeks. And the thing with Middle, they can be either very good or very bad. They haven't had a lot of close games this year. In fact, they're 0-4 against teams that have winning records, both straight up and against the spread. And the majority of their losses have all been big. You look at James Madison, they lost by 37. They lost by 15. They lost by 27. They lost by 18. And they lost by 16. So you're looking at a Middle team that doesn't match up as well with San Diego State, gets blown out when they do lose. Maybe they take chances in the fourth quarter. And this is a San Diego State team that beat Toledo, the MAC champion, and beat a good San Jose State team. And like I mentioned, beat UTSA, a much better CUSA team, last year by 14. So I like San Diego State minus the points.
Okay, interesting. Again, Hawaii Bowl, Christmas Eve, you stay up late, you wrap some presents, you do whatever you need to do getting ready for the big Christmas Day morning and settle into a little Middle Tennessee, San Diego State action. Phil likes the Aztecs. All right, let's go to Boxing Day. New Mexico State, awesome story here, right? They started the year 0-4. They rallied late to get bowl eligible. They're 6-6. They're taking on a 6-6 Bowling Green team. Mac alert, Phil. I know you love these Mac teams. Quick Lane Bowl in Detroit on Monday, December 26th, day after Christmas. What do you think?
Yeah, and this one I definitely like Bowling Green, minus the 3, 3.5. It's going to be like a home game for BG. They're only 120 miles away from Detroit. They'll travel well. I can't imagine very many New Mexico State fans are going to make the trip, even though it's a rare bowl game for them. And you look at who New Mexico State's beat this year. They beat Valparaiso. They beat LaPar, UMass, New Mexico, and Hawaii. Meanwhile, BG's had some better victories than that this year. They went into Toledo, came out with a win. They went into Central Michigan, got a win. And BG is a team much like Middle, where when they're good, they're very good. They've played well. They beat Western Michigan. In fact, they went 6-2 in the MAC this year. When they're bad, they tend to get blown out. But I think we're going to see a good BG, an excited BG. I like their quarterback in Matt McDonald. He's at 61% this year with a 22-8 ratio. Defensively, I give a slight edge to New Mexico State, but I'm going to give the quarterback edge definitely to BG. The home field, it's not really a home field, but the crowd edge definitely to BG here. I like Bowling Green minus the points.
It's okay, Phil. You can say it, Phil. New Mexico State has no fans that are going to make the trip to Detroit. It's okay. We all know this. Las Cruces to Detroit, it's hard to find direct flights this time of the year. It's okay. We understand. Tuesday, December 27th, Phil, this is when, look, we're done with Christmas. This is when we start getting 3, 4, 5 games a day. This is when it starts to really get thick with the college football games. And Tuesday is looking ahead to next week. You got a game at noon, and then the last game kicks off at almost 10:30 in Phoenix. So let's start with the early game. Camellia Bowl, Georgia Southern and Buffalo. The Eagles had that awesome win over App State in like triple overtime to even get bowl eligible. They rushed the field down there in Statesboro. Another MAC team here in Buffalo. Very high point total in this one, Phil. Almost 70 points between Georgia Southern and Buffalo, according to the odds makers. What do you think between these two teams in the Camellia Bowl?
Yeah, and the point total should be high in this one. When you look at Georgia Southern, their offense has been amazing. And I got to tell you, Coach Helton's done a tremendous, tremendous job. I thought that this year, taking a team from the option to a pass offense, I've seen it happen, 20 times over the last 20 years, let's say, and every time the team has struggled because they've got offensive linemen that are built to block, to run block, and now they have to pass block. You've got receivers that aren't really made to receive the ball, and you've got a quarterback that generally was an option quarterback. Well, what they did, they actually brought in Buffalo's quarterback, the irony there. Kyle Van Trees comes over, and he's allowed to throw the football, unlike what he was doing at Buffalo, just basically handing it off. And he had 25 touchdown passes this year. When I talked to Coach Helton going over the team with them, he said he was pleased with the receivers he inherited. In fact, he was surprised they had the type of receiving guys they had. And you look at what Singleton did this year. They brought him in, 1,373 yards. Hood had nearly 1,000 yards as well. It's a potent offense. It's averaging 108 yards above what their opponents allow. But defensively, they're not good at all. In fact, the last four games, they've given up 527 yards per game on the season. They allow foes 125 yards above their season average. Buffalo averages 376 per game, so add 125 to that. You're looking at 500 yards of offense for Buffalo. That's number 131 in the FBS this year. Buffalo's got Cole Snyder, an adequate quarterback. They don't have quite the run game they normally have, but they've got a little bit better defense. I like Georgia Southern with the crowd edge here. I think they will have a crowd edge over Buffalo, but I also like it to be a high-scoring game. So I've got Georgia Southern winning this something like 37-31.
I love high-scoring bowl games, Phil. I mean, no disrespect to the defensive lovers out there. I mean, there are games for those folks as well, but I love a shootout in a bowl game. I don't know what it is, man. It's just give me the offense. Let's go. Throw everything you got in the playbook. It's the last game of the year. I mean, in half of these cases, you got coordinators who aren't even coordinators for the year, right? Because of the coaching carousel, all these guys are switching jobs. So the people calling plays on offense and defense – in some cases, not all, Phil, but you got a lot of guys that, are maybe calling plays for the first time all season. So it can get a little weird offensively in some of these bowl games.
And the thing I found out, Stephen, is throughout the years is that the non-New Year's Day bowl games, the non-big games, teams tend to be loosey-goosey, try a lot of trick plays, and what the heck, let's go for it on 4th-and-1 at our own 23. All those are overplays. But when you get to the big games, there's a little more on the line. They seem to play a little bit tighter. Those games tend to go under the total. So pre-big games go over the total if you're torn, and post or in the big games go generally with the under.
And by the way, looking ahead to next week, we will have you back, Phil, for the New Year Six. We'll talk CFP. We will get through all those quote-unquote big games. But first, listen, man, Memphis and Utah State, these guys need love too. ServPro First Responders Bowl. I have used ServPro before. Quick plug here, Phil. You don't ever want to call ServPro because if you're calling ServPro, that means that like a toilet has overflowed or your roof is caved in or something awful has happened and these guys come in and literally clean it up for you. So Memphis and Utah State, you got the you got Memphis about a 7.5-point favorite here in Dallas. First of all, Phil, have you ever used ServPro? And then part two, who do you like in the game?
I have, thankfully, I have not used ServPro. But it's always good to know that option is out there in case something bad happens. Now, this is a game, Stephen, that's got 2 6-6 teams, right? So they're pretty similar.
Yes.
I don't see it that way. And my computer doesn't see it that way either. When it looks at Memphis, it sees a team that, you know, blew out a lot of opponents this year. They had a close 7-point loss to UCF. They had a 2-point loss to East Carolina. They blew a 2-score lead against Houston with about a minute and a half to go in the game. A remarkable onside kick. They played a very.
I remember that. That one still hurts, Phil. Oh. I remember that one.
Oh, yes. They played Tulane on the road and only lost by 10. They've only lost to SMU by 3 on the road. So they've played really good all season long. In fact, they're plus 49 yards per game on the season. They're gaining 16 yards more than their opponents allow. They're holding opponents to 22 yards below their season average, and they've played the tougher schedule. Now, the Mountain West, it was a down year for the Mountain West this year. And Utah State, fortunate to be in a bowl game by playing teams like San Jose, Hawaii, New Mexico, Colorado State. They did beat Air Force. Got to hand it to them. They played a good game there. But they lost Logan Bonner. Cooper Lagasse is the QB. Calvin Tyler, their 1,000-yard rusher, is not going to play here. And unlike Memphis, where these guys have played the softer schedule, they're allowing opponents 47 yards per game above their season average, and they're actually minus 34 yards per game. So I have something on my website called an average game grade, which takes into account the points, the yards for, yards against, and the opponent. And it's got, on the season, Memphis rated at 101.4, and it's got Utah State rated at 85.3. That's a 16-point difference, which is large for the Bulls. And the only major opt-out here, a player not playing, is Calvin Tyler, the top running back for Utah State. So I clearly like Memphis to win this one by a couple of touchdowns.
Okay, so maybe a one-sided affair in Dallas for the First Responders Bowl, according to Phil and his computers. Let's go to the Birmingham Bowl. Coastal Carolina is kind of a mess right now. No head coach, no quarterback. I mean, they have a head coach and a quarterback. It's just not the guys who have been there the entire year. ECU, Phil, we've talked a lot about the Pirates throughout the year. These guys are kind of like a sneaky ATM in Greenville. I mean, they are a lot of fun. Mike Houston's team. Well coached, they play hard, and I mean, just go back and look at what they did this year, including maybe should have beat NC State to kick off the year. So Coastal Carolina and East Carolina, ECU about a 7.5-point favorite in the Birmingham Bowl. Phil, what do you think?
Yeah, and I got Grayson McCall playing in the game for Coastal Carolina. You got something different there, Steve?
Okay, all right. I thought he was in the portal. Maybe he was last week, and now he's not. That's good to know.
He is in the portal, but he's going to play this game. He wants one last one for his team. So
keep that
in mind. And going back to East Carolina, remember they only lost to Cincinnati by 2 points. And in that game, they had a 22-13 first down edge, 454-310 yard edge. So this is a very good Houston or East Carolina team. And they've got a senior quarterback playing his final game in Holton Ahlers. So we got two remarkable quarterbacks that have been playing a long time, highly productive, playing their last game. That has me slanting towards the over. Also with East Carolina, they've got Keaton Mitchell, a 1,300-yard rusher. Coastal Carolina showed me a little something in that game against Troy. They got down 31-0, but then they scored four of their last six possessions with Grayson McCall in the game, came back and did it. So the total's a little high in this one. It's 62, but I think 62 is rather reasonable with two veteran senior quarterbacks. And East Carolina's defense down the stretch, not as good as they were at the start of the year. They allowed 447 yards per game, 67% completions. Coastal's having an average defense all year. So I actually like the over in this game as my favorite one, but I do like East Carolina winning.
One of the quick, you know, trends, call them meaningful or throw them out the window, whatever you want, Phil. The Sun Belt, with the exception of South Alabama getting run by Western Kentucky, the new look Sun Belt has been very good in these bowl games. Now, they are underdogs in a lot of these games that we've just talked about, including Coastal Carolina and ECU. But you know, that's something. Louisiana and Houston's another one that we talked about, but I've been impressed with the Sun Belt so far, Phil, in these postseason games. We'll see if that continues with some more of these bowl games that we've been talking about.
Absolutely.
Wisconsin, Oklahoma State. This is part four of a quadruple header on ESPN on this Tuesday. Helmet game here, right? Badgers, Pokes. We talked about the high point total in some of these games. That is not the case in the Guaranteed Rate Bowl. 43, Phil, is the total for Badgers and Oklahoma State. Wisconsin about a 3.5-point favorite.
This one I'm going to say it's, well, the last player out the door, please turn the light off, because Oklahoma State is missing a defensive end, a defensive end, a defensive tackle, their quarterback, their top running back, their linebacker, and another defensive end. Wisconsin, not playing here, is their star nose tackle, star linebacker, two cornerbacks, a left guard, their quarterback, and a center. Who's left to play in this game? I don't know. We got two teams, and Wisconsin, of course, has a head coach in Leonard that's not going to be coming back. Oklahoma State does have Gundy coming back. Now, the last 4 weeks' average game grade has Wisconsin big by 13.8, and I'd probably be really strong on Wisconsin if this was full strength against full strength, but that's not what we have here. So I do like Wisconsin. I like the fact that Oklahoma State's offense was much more geared to Spencer Sanders. Sanders ran for 361 and was a very capable passer. Meanwhile, Graham Mertz didn't run the ball and threw the ball very little, you know, not as much yards. They run the ball with Braylon Allen. And Ches Malusi missed three games, the Clemson transfer. He came back and nearly rushed for 100 in each of the final two games. So I like the running backs. Wisconsin's on the season is plus 57 yards per game. Oklahoma State's minus 25 yards per game. Spread's reasonable at 3.5. So I like the Badgers minus the points. I just wish we had full strength against full strength here.
Yeah, that's a good point. And Graham Mertz, he's going to be a Gator next year, heading down to Gainesville. That should be interesting.
I don't understand that one, because Napier's offense is geared for a mobile quarterback. What the hell is Graham Mertz doing?
Mertz is not that guy, Phil. He's not what we would call a mobile quarterback. Let's do one more day if you've got it in you, Phil. Let's look ahead to Wednesday, December 28th. We just came off a 4-game slate on Tuesday. We got 4 more on Wednesday. UCF and Duke to get us started at 2:00, Military Bowl in Annapolis. Duke's been so good this year, Phil. Nobody talks about them. I mean, I understand why. It's not sexy, but, boy, Duke has overachieved this year with a first-year head coach. UCF has as well. They've had a very nice year. So 9-4 UCF, 8-4 Duke. And how about the Blue Devils of the ACC, a 3-point favorite over the Knights? What do you think?
Yeah, and I think Duke has overachieved. UCF, if anything, has probably underachieved a little bit this year with the 4 losses. And their losses were all pretty much close, except the Tulane game. And in Tulane, the shocking thing was prior to the game, Miley Keene is on the sideline, their backup quarterback that's come in quite often for John Rhys Plumlee. And you're like, what's he doing there? And he opts to redshirt and opt out and transfer. So they were down to Thomas Castellanos at QB, sort of unexpected when Plumlee got injured. Now, Plumlee should be closer to full health here. And I think if that's the case, UCF does have the better team as long as he stays healthy. But Duke has played great this season. I really like what Riley Leonard's done, both running and passing. He's the leading rusher on the team. He's at 64% completions. He's got 20 touchdowns, just 6 interceptions. Wide receiver O'Keefe is out for this game for UCF. He is their top guy. But this is one of those games where when I feed it into my computer, it says UCF's a better team, and they're an underdog, and they're going to outgain Duke. So I'm going to knock on wood and hope John Rhys Plumlee stays fully healthy. If not, Thomas Castellanos should be better prepared to take his place. And I'm going to go with the underdog in this one and UCF to pull the upset.
See, your computers are doing the same thing we all did with Duke this year, which is we don't think they're going to win these games, and they find a way to, Phil. It's impressive stuff that they've done in Durham this year. All right, let's go to Kansas and Arkansas. Fascinating matchup here, right? I mean, Kansas came out of the gate. They were red hot. They hosted College Game Day. TCU went to Lawrence, beat them. Arkansas, though, disappointing, right? 6-6 on the year. I mean, they should be better. I know the SEC West is tough, but still, Arkansas, Kansas, hooking up in the Liberty Bowl. Razorbacks about a 3-point favorite. And if you like offense, I'm seeing an over-under here of 69 points, Phil. What do you think?
Yeah, and I do think it will be high scoring. You look at Arkansas's defense, they began the year pretty good. But, you know, on the season, they're giving up 453 yards per game, 50 yards above the season average. I don't like that. But I do like them offensively. And KJ Jefferson's going to play. Raheem Sanders, their outstanding running back, is going to play. They're going to be missing some key guys at linebacker, which may help the total. They're also going to be missing their center for this game. But I love the powerful run game of Arkansas with KJ Jefferson running the football as well. They averaged 224 yards per game on the ground playing in the SEC. I mean, they topped 200 against everybody and some really good defenses all year. Now they take on a Kansas defense that's very susceptible to the run. The last four games, they've given up 258 yards per game on the ground, 5.4 yards per carry. I think Arkansas controls this thing on the ground. And even missing the linebackers they are, I do think they can slow down Kansas enough. We've seen Kansas get slowed down. Texas held them to 14. They got a couple of late scores against Kansas State, but they can be stopped on a basis. I think Arkansas is flat the better team. They're from the better conference. The game's in Memphis, so I think Arkansas is going to have the crowd edge here. I like Arkansas minus the points in this one.
How do you handicap, or what goes into your thoughts when you look at a program like Kansasville when it's been so long? I mean, none of those players, you know, unless they've transferred in from another school, have been a part of a postseason game, and now they're back in a bowl for the first time in over a decade. How do you handicap something like that?
I think they're going to be super excited for this game. But I also think Arkansas at 6-6 sure as heck doesn't want to have a losing record at the end of the year. They had too many high expectations coming into the year, and this is the first game of next season, you might say, for Arkansas.
Okay. Let's go to Petco Park. They play baseball here, but on Wednesday of next week, it's going to be the Holiday Bowl, Oregon and North Carolina. Phil, this is a monster number, okay? The Ducks are over a two-touchdown favorite. The over-under is 74. That's not shocking because UNC has been putting up points and can't stop anybody all year. But, boy, two teams that really saw their seasons kind of head south late in the month of November with some of these rivalry losses. Oregon, North Carolina, Phil, what do you think?
Yeah, Oregon blew that big lead against Oregon State and then a tough loss to Washington as well by three in a game. They had the 592-yard edge. And, you know, surprisingly down the stretch, North Carolina turned into an under team. They had unders in two of their last three games. And for this game, North Carolina is going to be missing the bulk of their secondary. Their top four cornerbacks are gone. But also their wide receiver, Josh Downs, not going to play in this game. However, Drake May is back. And the Ducks will also be depleted a little bit at missing their top cornerback as well as one of their top defensive linemen. So both teams' defenses are not on par. Both teams' offenses are explosive. So I think Vegas has got this one correct. It should be a very high-scoring game. Now, Oregon has only got 16 sacks on the year, and their top defensive lineman's out. So I think that you're going to see Drake May have some opportunity to throw the football. I think we're going to see a lot of points. I like Oregon to win the game, but I find it tough to lay two touchdowns in a bowl game. So I'm going to call this one right around the number, Oregon by about 14 points in this. But my best play would probably be the over. Even though it's a ridiculously high number, neither team has anything to lose, and you got two really good quarterbacks.
Yeah, that's a good point. By the way, speaking of quarterbacks, how good is the Pac-12 going to be next year, Phil? I mean, Bo Nix is back. Caleb Williams is back. Michael Penix is back. I mean, I feel like I can hear Wayne Cook, even though he's not on the show. He's rubbing his hands together. He's super excited.
It sounds like what they said about the ACC coming into the year, and it turned out to be a below-average year for ACC, except for Drake May. But, yes, I have to think overall, you have to think the optimistic part would be they're going to have some good offenses.
It's good for college football when the Pac-12 is getting, you know, attention. When it's a real national sport, that's a good thing for a lot
yes.
of folks. Okay, the nightcap on Wednesday, final game that we're going to break down here with Phil. And again, he will be back next week with me and Wayno. We'll run through New Year's Six games and get Phil's take on the college football playoff and some of these others. But Texas Tech, Ole Miss. Ole Miss, kind of like Oregon and North Carolina that we talked about in the earlier game, Phil, really, really kind of hit the skids in that final month of the season. Texas Tech, 7-5, pretty nice under first-year head coach there in Lubbock. Ole Miss, a 3.5-point favorite over the Red Raiders. What's your lean in this one, Phil?
In this one, I like the Rebels of Ole Miss. And this is, you take a look at, you know, going back to my computer in the average game grade, over the last four games, Ole Miss won, beat Texas A&M by three, and then lost three in a row. So they come into this on a three-game losing streak. Texas Tech, meanwhile, lost that close one to TCU and then won their final three games, including wins over Iowa State and Oklahoma. So my last 4 weeks' average game grades should have Texas Tech large here, right? But guess what? It's actually got Ole Miss by 9 points. So it's taken into account the yards. It's taken into account the opponents they played. And it says even though Ole Miss lost their last three and Texas Tech won their last three, Ole Miss was playing better football. And I like the fact we have an Ole Miss team that sure as heck doesn't want to go in the offseason losing four in a row. And when I talked to Texas Tech's head coach this year, we were going over Joey McGuire during the season talking about the awards. He said that the best player in the Big 12 was probably his linebacker, Wilson. And guess what? He got injured late in the year, and they gave up 672 yards to Oklahoma, and he's going to miss this game. So you got a potent Ole Miss offense that loves to run the football against a Texas Tech defense that in the last five games gave up close to 5.5 yards per carry. So it's a good matchup for Ole Miss. I think Ole Miss off three losses, needs a win. Texas Tech off three wins. Happy to be here. I'm going to go with Ole Miss minus the 3.5.
Okay, there you go. So, folks, that right there is a solid dozen or so bowl picks from our man Phil Steele, who will be back next week, and we'll run through some of these big-time games because we're starting to get up on it. New Year's Eve is rapidly approaching, and I'm really excited to talk about some of these college football matchups with you, Phil. Thank you for doing this all year, Phil. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to you and your family. All right. Enjoy the weekend, and we'll talk to you with me and Wayne next week, okay?
A lot of fun, as always, Stephen. And happy holidays to you and your family and to all the listeners out there as well.
We'll talk to you next week.
That's
here
our
on CSN.
Man.
Happy holidays. Phil, you're the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Stephen. Now you got to get back to your kids.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.